Good morning, everyone. I have to comment on the weather, don't I? You'd think there was something wrong with me if I didn't comment on the weather here. And it seems like I always have the opportunity to comment good things about the weather when I'm up here. So we've been extremely blessed weather-wise this year. My message this morning is titled, Godly Humility. And I know that if I were going to ask you this morning if you have ever suffered through any kind of humiliating experience in your life, you'd all raise your hand. And I know that you probably would not want to share that experience with us here this morning. Because when we go through humiliating experiences, it's something that we generally want to put behind us as quickly as possible and forget about. It's not something we want to dwell on, reminisce about. But last winter, while Marion and I were in Arizona, the pastor at the church that we attended gave a message on humility. And all these months later, the one thing that really sticks in my mind about his message on humility, and it was a great message, but the thing that sticks in my mind is the story he told about how he was so humiliated one time in his life. And as I said, it's very difficult for us to share humiliating experiences. It's not something we want to go back and talk about. So I'm not going to share mine, I'm going to share his. It's always a lot easier to talk about somebody else's humbling experiences. And Pastor Todd told about a time when he was snow skiing very early in his career. He was a young man just learning how to snow ski. And stopping when you're learning how to ski is sometimes very difficult. Obviously, a very important thing to learn while you're skiing as well. And he talked about how he was learning this awkward way of stopping. You know, it was kind of, you know, you put your skis in kind of a V. I guess they call that snow plowing. He thought, well, skiing is okay, but that really, really didn't look at all cool when he was skiing. And as he skied a little more, he was noticing the more advanced skiers were doing a really cool way of stopping. He called it swooshing. He said they would come swooshing to a stop. And he said, that was so cool. So he really worked on learning how to swoosh to a stop. And one day when he just thought he really had the swooshing thing down pat, he's coming down the hill one day and he spots a couple young ladies standing near the end of the run. And of course, first thing that he thinks about is he's going to come swooshing right in front of them and really impress them with his great ability to ski. And of course, you probably know where this story is going since we're talking about humbling experiences. He's barreling down the hill, gets right in front of the young ladies and swoosh. Only he doesn't stop. He flips end over end and eventually ends up stopping against this orange net fence at the end of the run. He didn't impress those girls at all. They thought it was very amusing, but they weren't at all impressed. And I guess after sharing Pastor Todd's experience, I'll share one of my experiences that was a little bit humbling. And it goes way, way back because it's during my high school days. And obviously, you know, when you're way over 60, your high school days are really a long time ago. So my memory may be just a little bit clouded. But as I best recall, I had been bowling. And I had been bowling for quite some time and thought I was pretty good at it. And one day I was bowling and having an exceptionally good game. And as bowling goes, as you progress through the game and your score starts climbing, pretty soon people are watching. You know, this guy's really doing well. And, of course, I was really excited about that. Everybody was watching it. What a wonderful bowler I was. So about the seventh or eighth frame, I come up to release my ball at the foul line, only much like Pastor Todd and his experience, I didn't stop at the foul line. I ended up about halfway up the alley, flat on my butt with the ball rolling down the gutter. Very, very humiliating. You know, it might not have been so bad if I was doing this alone or if I didn't have this crowd watching me, but it was very embarrassing. In fact, at the time I was so embarrassed, I didn't bowl again for years. I was so determined that I wasn't going to allow this to happen to me anytime real soon, so quitting bowling seemed like the way to handle it. And last winter, while Marion and I were in Arizona, the first thing we did is start searching out a church home for ourselves for the winter. And we went to many, many churches, but it seemed like every single church we attended, the messages were just fantastic. And each time we walked into a church and heard these messages, I felt more and more humbled and more inadequate in my ability to preach. I thought, I could only dream about ever giving a message like that. Then Pastor Merle arrived. And once again, I've been extremely blessed, but at the same time, extremely humbled by his amazing messages. And this morning, there won't be any parades. I'm not going to pass out candy. I won't be preaching from the back of the church. There's not even any balloons. But then, I'm not Pastor Merle, and I'm not going to try to be. And I know I have to, and I think we all have to remind ourselves from time to time that we don't have to be great. And we never have to compare ourselves with anyone else. I think that we all need to think about this. I think we all forget about it. We all feel that we should be able to do things as well as someone else. I know I wish I could play the piano like a couple of great piano players we have here. I wish I could sing like almost everyone else can do so much better than I can. But I can't. And I think the beautiful thing is that God never, ever compares us to anyone else. And as I like to say, God never measures us using somebody else's yardstick. He measures us with a yardstick created just for us. Now, how cool is that? He measures us only against his expectations, his hopes and dreams for us. He doesn't compare me to you, and he doesn't compare any of us to each other. We don't have to try and accomplish things in the way others do it. We only have to do what God put us here to do. Now, I've shared some humbling experiences in my life as well as Pastor Todd's life. And there's a world of difference between being humble and being humiliated. God's plan is not for us to be humiliated. He doesn't want us to go through humbling experiences, although we all will, and we already, I'm sure, all have. He merely wants us and he expects us to be humble. Now, I haven't used Wikipedia for a definition in quite some time, but you all know that's my favorite. And I went to Wikipedia to see how it defines humility. And it says, humility is the defining characteristic of an unpretentious and modest person. Someone who does not think that he or she is better or more important than others. The term humility is derived from the Latin word humilis, which is translated not only as humble, but has an alternate meaning as low or from the earth. And the word humus, meaning earth or dirt. Humility as a religious or spiritual virtue is different from the act of humiliation or shaming, though the former may follow as a consequence of the latter. So it's not about being humbled or being humiliated. A humble person, though, may very well be subjected to humiliation. And it's said that if a person knows they're humble, they're not humble. Because a truly humble person doesn't even know they're humble. True humility is not something that we can think about doing or being. It has to be a part of our nature. Humility is something we will achieve indirectly. Jesus' life was truly a lesson in humility. Jesus never worked at being humble. Humility was just part of who he was. It was part of his nature. And after all, what could possibly be more humble than for Jesus Christ, the Son of God, being willing to step down out of heaven, take on human flesh, effectively the Creator becoming the creation? And when he arrived, what did we do? We mocked him. We ridiculed him. And eventually we nailed him to a cross. That is humility. And humility is not the fact that we ridiculed him and beat him and nailed him to a cross, because that isn't humility. That's humiliation. Humility was the fact that our God and Creator allowed this to happen to himself. Jesus lowered himself. Talk about the definition, low, the earth. Jesus submitted himself to the will of his Father. That was the act of humility. The Wikipedia definition said that humility is different than humiliation. And he says that humiliation may be a consequence of humility. And as a result of this humility, Jesus Christ suffered. He suffered a horrible, horrible ordeal leading up to his crucifixion, and then he suffered a crucifixion on a cross, the wooden cross. And why? For you and I. He suffered for you and I. That is how he chose, or his Father chose, to save the world, to save each and every one of us. Provided our salvation, allowed his Son to be nailed to the cross for our sins. And if you recall the sequence of events that fateful night, the night before he died, he went through another act of humility. When he, the Creator, bent down, actually got down on his hands and knees on the floor and washed the feet of his apostles. And we remember Peter's pride when Peter said, "Lord, you will not wash my feet." Washing another person's feet is not something that any of us would enjoy doing. But in those days, it was common for hosts to provide a facility, at least in a home, for people to wash their feet. So visitors coming in after walking barefoot or in sandals on dusty, dirty roads could wash their feet. And if the host was a wealthy person, he'd probably have a servant or a slave to do that for his guests. Here we have Jesus, the host himself, in this incredible act of humility, getting down on the floor and washing the feet of his disciples. And we read this morning in John chapter 13, verses 1 through 17. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave the world and go to the Father, saying, "Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love." The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was again returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that he had wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." Then Lord Simon replied, "Not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." And Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that is why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. And he said, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you, and I tell you the truth, that no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him.
Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. In the beginning of this passage, it was said that Jesus knew that his hour had come. He knew that the time had come when he would submit himself to be tortured, beaten beyond recognition, and eventually crucified. And the Bible speaks of several times during his lifetime when it was said that his time had not yet come. Remember Jesus' own word at the wedding feast at Cana when his mother asked him to help out the couple who was running out of wine. And his answer was, "Mother, don't you understand that my time has not yet come?" And in those days, probably the most humiliating thing that could happen to a bride and groom would be running out of wine at the celebration. And Jesus understood that. And even though he had told his mother his time had not yet come, yet in the following moments, he proceeded to save the bride and groom from their humiliation and their embarrassment. We know of other times when the Bible speaks about his time having not yet come. And on one occasion, there was a group who sought to harm him, and they were not able to get to him. The Bible says he was hidden from their sight because his time had not yet come. But now we read in John chapter 13, verse 1, that his time had now come, and he was about to submit to his Father's will, and he was about to fulfill the reason that he'd come to earth some 30 years earlier. Today, this very moment, all signs are pointing to the fact that our time has come. Our hour has arrived. And you've heard me say this many times. God has called us to Calumet. We are not here by accident. God led us here, provided us a home, a beautiful, wonderful home. And now he's provided us with not just a pastor, but we got an added bonus. We have Ginger as well. And we have been truly, truly blessed. When we count all our blessings and look at all that God has given us over the years here, we know that our time has now come. Our hour has come. God has provided us with all the tools that we need. Our time has now come to search our hearts and search our souls, to find our niche, to find out what God has brought us here to do, each and every one of us, not as necessarily as a congregation, but God has brought each and every one of us here for a very special reason. We are all part of his plan for ourselves, for Calumet, and for Grace Christian Fellowship. God has called each and every one of us with a purpose. No one is here this morning or on this earth at all by accident. Everyone is here this morning because we were called. Nobody just happened to stumble in the door. We came together for a reason. Helen Keller is quoted as saying, "I long to accomplish great and noble tasks, but it is my chief duty to accomplish humble tasks as though they were great and noble." The world is moved along not only by the mighty shoves of its heroes, but also by the aggregate of the tiny pushes of each honest worker. Not all the tasks that God calls us to perform are going to be great and noble, but we must humbly accept each and every one of those tasks and perform them as though they were great and noble. Because there are tasks. They're the purpose that God put us here for. In the days, weeks, and months ahead, God will send many through our door. They may not look like us. They may not talk like us. They may not think like us, but they are all God's children, and they have been called by him, and they're here as our guests in God's house. Are we going to be prepared to welcome them, accept them, and treat them as God's guests? Wash their feet if necessary and welcome them into our family. If you recall over the last 6 weeks, and I won't quiz you this morning like Merle has every week, but I'm going to refresh your memory. Merle has told us, 1, we will dance. 2, we will come out of our comfort zone. 3, we will carry hope.
4, we will be holy and model him. 5, we will expect. And 6, we will be excited. And today in part 7, I'm telling you that we will do all of these things. And we will be humble. As we grow, our families will become blended. It may take on all sorts of new characteristics, and we may very well begin to look and feel very different than we do now as this family continues to grow. And if we're truly humble, if we're willing to allow God to mold and shape this church and this congregation rather than our own will, we will need to be prepared to accept change. We will need to be willing to step out of our comfort zones, and at times, way out of our comfort zones. God is going to ask us to accept change, to accept all his children. God's children come in all sizes and shapes, and believe it or not, they're not all modeled after us. Like us, they're all modeled after God. We are all modeled in his image. And we must never lose sight of the fact that it's all about him and it's not at all about us. Humility happens in our lives when we start thinking less of ourselves and more of others, and above all, more of him. As I said, humility is not a direct thing. We don't go out and get humility. We achieve humility when we think more of him and more of others. Humility grows in us when we accept whatever he calls us to do. It grows in us when we accept change. It grows in us when we choose his will for going our own, for the honor and glory of the Father. We're not here this morning or at all for Pastor Merle's glory. We're certainly not here for my glory. We're not here for your glory. We are here for the glory of the Father. It has never, ever been about us. We didn't come to Calumet for us. We didn't come together as a congregation for us. And I pray this morning that we will grow in our godly humility each and every day, that we continue to prepare ourselves, that we humble ourselves before the Father. And let's everybody stand this morning. We're going to close with our closing hymn, Breathe. And following that, Pastor Merle will close us this morning in prayer.